I've got a few things that we can help us with today, and you'll have to try and work out how we're going to put them into the story. First is just a little light. How's that going to be part of the story? Jesus. Something about today that's connected with that picture. How does that fit with the story today? Good enough. Also something today. How does that fit with our story? So today, thinking about light, thinking about the Tour de France, today's the final stage, and thinking about the moon landing, 1969, today. So how does all that fit with this incident between Jesus and this woman? Hope your brain cells are working this morning. And may the Holy Spirit of God give us wisdom and insight and understanding. One of the things that came through earlier today was desperate. Did you hear that in part of the song that David quoted when he was doing communion? This woman was desperate. She really needed help. And she knew that she could get the help from Jesus. She was a woman of great faith. She didn't even bother to take her daughter with her. All I've got to do is I've got to see Jesus. And he's completely capable of healing my daughter just with a word. I don't have to take her, the little kid, to see Jesus. Jesus doesn't even need to see the child. This woman was desperate. I want to tell you about a friend of mine. That's him on the bike. He's not quite in the Tour de France stage, a level of international competition, but he loves bike riding. He's part of a bike club and, you know, yes, he goes on races and all that sort of thing. One day he's riding along and suddenly gets this incredible pain in his chest. Staggers off, gets to the nearest house, bangs on the door. I'm desperate, I need help. Ambulance, hospital, open heart surgery. He's okay now. He was desperate. Didn't care that he didn't know the people in the house. I'm desperate, I need help. That's what this woman was like. She was desperate, she needed help, and she was completely confident that God in Jesus would be able to help her. Now, how did she know anything about Jesus? Well, you've been working through Mark's Gospel. You've already done chapter 3, and in there it talks about crowds of people coming to Jesus from all sorts of different places, including Tyre and Sidon. Now, we don't know if the woman was part of that crowd, but we can imagine that people from Tyre and Sidon went back from Galilee to their own cities and they talked about Jesus and the things that they'd seen, that he'd healed people from all sorts of different diseases and he'd cast out demons. And bang, the woman's ears prick up. Got to be Jesus. That's the person I have to see. Don't know how I'm going to do it. I can't leave where I am. Those other people were able to go to Galilee, but I can't. And then somehow or other she hears that Jesus is in the vicinity. And she's desperate to see him. What do we know about her? Well, there's no name. There's no ages for the woman or her daughter. There's nothing about her husband or father or any other brothers or sisters. All we know is that she's born in that area and that she's what we would call modern day Lebanon, that coast area of the Mediterranean Sea, and she's a Greek. Now, that could mean she's a real Greek, or it could mean that Greek is just anybody else who's not a Jew. But she's obviously not a Jew, and so she's got some significant differences from Jesus. And certainly the people who were not Jews did not worship Yahweh or Jehovah God. And in that part of the world, if she was a Greek, there were all the traditional Greek gods of Zeus. And we've got the Olympic Games starting on Friday. And so that's all to do with the Greek gods. There were 12 main gods and goddesses. And if it was the local gods of that area in what we call Lebanon now, the main god in that area back in those days was called Baal. And so there is a significant difference between this woman's background and Jesus and his disciples. Monotheistic religion in the one true and living God who made covenant and promises to Abraham and issued laws and then the traditions that developed from Moses and so on. So there's big differences in that sort of religious background. And part of that led to significant problems between the Jews and the people of that area, Tyre and Sidon. And a Jewish historian who lived around about just after Jesus, called Josephus, said, "For us Jews, the people of Tyre and Sidon are our bitterest enemies." And that was based on about 850 years of problems, dating back to an incident when a princess from Tyre and Sidon married into the northern kingdom of Israel. Jezebel married Ahab. She became Queen Jezebel. She took the religion of Baal into the northern kingdom and she tried to eliminate the worship of Jehovah and killed off the prophets of God, and she was after Elijah, one of the prophets. And so that's part of the history and why there was this enmity between the Jews and the people of Tyre and Sidon. And Jesus is there in that vicinity. And she hears about him. And she, because of what her friends who visited Galilee said, she knew that Jesus was completely capable of getting rid of the demon in her daughter. She had faith, strong faith. "Don't even need to take my daughter, just so long as I see Jesus and explain the situation, of course he's going to heal her." She was desperate, just like my friend on his bike was desperate, banged on the door, said, "Let me in, I need help." Somehow or other she hears about Jesus being in the area, finds out the house, and marches in. Now, in most societies of the world, you don't do that. That's called being rude. You wait for the host or hostess to invite you into the dwelling. But she bowls on in. And she interrupts Jesus. Gets him to stop whatever he's doing. We don't know what time of day it was. Maybe he was having an afternoon nap. Maybe he's talking with the host and hostess and their family. Maybe he's having a teaching session with the disciples. Whatever it is, she bowls in and stops him. She interrupts him. Then, again, she starts talking to him directly. Women didn't do that in that culture and still don't in that part of the world. Women don't talk to men who are not their relatives. But she has the audacity to talk to him straight off. And then it says she falls at his feet. That's a real invasion of personal space. And not proper behaviour between men and women. She doesn't care. She's desperate to see Jesus and she has complete faith that he is able to get rid of the demon and set her daughter free. She's not worried about other people's expectations, doesn't care what they think, doesn't worried that everybody's looking at her. She only has eyes for Jesus. So how do you feel when you hear this story? Maybe you're like the host and hostess or the disciples and you're sort of, this woman makes me uncomfortable. You know, she's just barged on in, interrupted everything, and she's hysterical and, you know, she's making a scene. Or is it Jesus who makes you uncomfortable with what Jesus says and what he doesn't do initially? Obviously, this woman's desperate, and it looks perhaps as if Jesus is just brushing her off, giving her the flick, and minimizing the situation of her daughter. Is that the kind of Jesus that we expect? Is that how he treats people? So maybe you feel uncomfortable about this kind of a Jesus. Or maybe it's the words that Jesus is saying. You know, for us in 2024 in Australia, you call someone a dog, that's not particularly complimentary. And is this a personal attack on the woman? Is this a racist slur that Jesus is throwing at her? So, how do you feel about Jesus? So, it forces us to think a little bit more, to dig a bit deeper. Now, Jesus used lots of parables and analogies and metaphors and similes and things like that, and he takes the assumptions of the people of his time and he gives them back, and either he builds on them and reinforces them, or he flips them over and gives something else that they hadn't expected. And most of the parables are like that. There's a twist. There's something you don't expect that catches you by surprise. So we need to have a little look at what Jesus is saying here. So there are four things. The word first, bread, children, and dogs. Now, if I say, first I'm going to tell you da-da-da-da-da, straight away there's a thing in your head that says, oh, there's going to be more. There's going to be at least the second, if not the third and fourth. So the important thing to realize here is Jesus has not finished. First, let the children eat. Don't throw the kids' food to the dogs. And second, you're expecting Jesus to go on. But where's the second point? We'll come back to that in a minute. But that little word first is important. Next word, bread. The Jews had a really strong idea about bread. When they came out of Egypt after the slavery in Egypt, they were wandering around in the desert. They didn't have crops and things like that that they were looking after, or gardens. God cared for them and provided for them on a daily basis. He gave them life each day by giving them bread from heaven. Manna, that story. So for the Jews, bread is life. It's God's care, it's God's compassion, and he gives it to us. He doesn't give it to anybody else. It's just us, the Jews. That's the way the disciples had been brought up to think. So Jesus takes that assumption and includes it and says, yes, God gives you life, God cares for you, and the Jews are God's special people, yes. And the next word, children. Again, the Jews were brought up to think, we are children of Abraham. God's promises, Genesis chapter 12, I will give you a name and I will give you a land and I will give you descendants. Stars in the sky, sand on the seashore. We are the children of Abraham. We are God's special people, the covenant people, the people of promise. We are God's holy people. Jesus includes that and says, yes, you Jews are special. But remember, who's the person who's desperate to see him? And then Jesus talks about dogs. If you go back into the beginnings in with the laws of Moses, it talked about clean and unclean food. Now, just at the start of chapter 7, you did that presumably last week or the week before or sometime, was all about clean and unclean. Dogs were not food. They were not clean. So, again, a Jewish idea is that dogs are unclean. And over time, that idea spun off onto the people who were not children of God, not people of promise and covenant. They were not holy people, they were unclean people, so they were dogs. So yes, that became a bit of a slur or a derogatory comment that the Jews used about everybody else that were not Jews against the Gentiles. They're dogs, they're unclean. So again, that's something that the disciples had in their background. And in the New Testament, the most common word that's used for dog refers to a mature, adult, uncontrolled dog roaming the streets in packs. That's the usual word that you'll find. But it's not the word here. This word is a derivative of that. It's what we might call a diminutive, means little dogs or puppies. And if you think carefully about what Jesus is saying, let the children eat. Don't throw the bread to the little dogs. That means the little dogs are inside the house. They're not adult dogs out roaming the street. They're little puppies inside. That means they're acceptable. That means they are clean. Jesus has thrown something that they didn't expect at them, just with that little word. But he said first. So we're thinking, okay, where's second? What's the next thing? Where's the climax? Because if someone says first, you expect something else is going to come and that's going to give the punchline. That's going to hit it. So we're expecting Jesus to give us something more. So what was running around in Jesus' head before he gives the second point? And I suggest it's got something to do with his identity and his mission. Now, when Jesus was a baby, he was presented at the temple as part of Mary's purification rituals and things. And there was an old bloke called Simeon, and he looks at this baby and he says, aha, this is it. What I've been waiting for. This is God's promised Messiah. And Simeon started to quote from Isaiah 49, and he was praising God. And one of those things is a line that says, God's servant, the promised Messiah, is a light for revelation to the Gentiles. And I can guarantee that Mary and Joseph told that story about Simeon to Jesus. And I would also guarantee that over the years as he grew up, he kept going back to Isaiah 49 and meditating on it, because that's what Simeon had given when he was a baby. I am the Son of God. I am God the Son. I am God's servant. I am the Christ, I am the Messiah, I am a light to the Gentiles. That's my identity. So where is Jesus now? He's left the land of the Jews, he's in the land of the Gentiles, and who's fronted up, who's desperate to see him? A Gentile. So what's he going to do? He's going to be a light for revelation to the Gentiles. So I think that's part of what was running through Jesus' head before he gets to the second thing. Apollo 11, the moon landing, the first walk. Do you know that Australia now has the first real Australian astronaut? A woman called Catherine Bennell-Pegg, this year in April, completed training for the International Space Station. There's a couple of blokes before, but they were involved in space things with USA citizenship. But she's involved with Australian citizenship. So she's our first real Australian astronaut. So those three fellas back in 1969, they're role models. They're role models for this woman, Catherine, or for Andy Thomas and the other fellow, whose name I've forgotten. And the same sort of thing is here. There's a little bit of deja vu. And going back to that story about Jezebel and Elijah, there's a situation there. Elijah is the prophet of God. God takes him out of the land of the Jews, puts him in the land of the Gentiles. He meets a Gentile woman who has a sick child, and he heals the child. There's a parallel here. Can you see it? Jesus is the prophet of God, who leaves the land of the Jews, goes to the land of the Gentiles, meets a Gentile woman who has a sick child, and what's he going to do? Pretty obvious. Now, if I say this, the grass is always on the every cloud. Don't count. You know what's coming. It's pretty obvious what was going to come in this situation, isn't it? That's why the woman's a woman of great faith. She has complete confidence that God is, that Jesus is capable of getting rid of the demon, and that he will. Because that's the nature of God revealed in Jesus. Have you ever tried to explain something to somebody and you've given the first point and you're just about to say the next thing and your friend jumps in and says it for you and it's actually really, really good and you thought, oh, wow, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's what this woman did. Jesus never had a chance to say his second thing because she jumps in and says it for him. Ha ha, yes, Lord, I got it. No worries. You calling us little puppies, we're clean, we're inside the family. Aha, of course. Yeah, the puppies get some as well. So we, the Gentiles, we also receive your goodness and mercy and your grace and compassion. And Jesus is there laughing and clapping. Yeah, you got it. He was delighted that this woman could see the extravagant grace of God, the way God lavishes his love on us. She was a woman of great faith. That's why she turned up. And Jesus is stretching the disciples and pulling them, come on guys, we've just spent the early part of chapter 7 talking about purity. Don't put barriers in the way of this woman. Don't let your Jewish prejudices block her out, and the history of enmity between Jews and the people from Tyre and Sidon. Don't close things off. This woman knew. And Jesus was thrilled and excited. Yeah, you got it. And she's, yeah, I got it. She was desperate and she knew Jesus could help her. So today, can you see that God is full of grace, that his mercy and love is for everyone? And don't put barriers and prejudices and racism in front of God. Jesus spoke about bread and he said, I am the bread of life. That's what we've just done. If anyone comes to me, they'll never thirst, they'll never hunger, they'll have life. I don't know if some of you, most of you, but have you got that life? Do you know Jesus? And how big do you think God's grace is? Are you closing God's love off from some people? Well, don't do that. God's grace is huge. So open your life to God's grace, and may God's grace flow through you to other people. Maybe there's something in your life and you're desperate to get to Jesus. Great, go to him. He's not going to turn you away. The disciples wanted to, if you read the account in Matthew 11, they wanted to get Jesus to tell the woman to nick off. No. So this week, maybe you might encounter someone who's desperate to see Jesus. How can you help them to meet Jesus so that that person can experience God's grace? This is God's word for us today.